This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Ben Carlin, executive producer of Comedy Central's Daily Show with Jon Stewart and its equally savvy satirical spinoff, The Colbert Report, just announced his intention to leave both shows at the end of the month. He has a book to write and a life he hopes to reclaim. Carlin has been Stewart's right-hand man for the past 7 years, which included The Daily Show's triumphant election year coverage of 2000 and 2004. Stewart's nightly, brilliant fake newscast reaches some 1.5 million viewers and lots of awards voters. Since Stewart inherited the show from former host Craig Kilborn and revamped it, The Daily Show has won 7 Emmys and 2 Peabody Awards. Here's a clip from last night's show, with Jon Stewart presenting footage of the Iraq Study Group.
I want to talk to you about the bipartisan Iraq Study Group. 10-member panel, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, each a valued member of a previous administration, each one impossibly older than the next. Is this the Iraq Study Group, or are they perhaps doing a remake of Cocoon? For God's sakes, man! Anyway, co-chairman Lee Hamilton, 148, got things started.
Situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating.
Go on.
The current approach is not working. And the ability of the United States to influence events is diminishing.
You know, he also performs at children's parties. He's awful. Not a lot of return business. Anyway, that was the upbeat part of the report. Just to give you a sense, here are some quoted highlights. Chapter 1, the situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating. Chapter 2, there is no guarantee for success in Iraq. Chapter 3, if the situation in Iraq continues to deteriorate, the consequences could be severe for Iraq, the United States, the region, and the world. Chapter 4, sweet Jesus, is that house made out of bodies?
Terry spoke with Ben Carlin earlier this year when current events at the time included Vice President Dick Cheney and a shotgun.
Ben Carlin, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with a report that was about the vice president shooting his friend while hunting. First of all, what went through your mind when you heard the news, knowing that you'd have to come up with some way of addressing this on The Daily Show?
None of us could believe that it actually happened. It's pretty much, in the 8 years or so that I've been at the show, probably the softest ball that has come across the plate, I would say. And there was no shortage of ideas. It was one of those moments where you're sitting in the room with everybody and, you know, there's 20 great things, funny things flying around. And it was just a question of not letting our giddiness overwhelm the process. But that was one of the more fun days, I would say, of the job.
I want to play an excerpt of the report that Nate Cordry did, but I want you to describe the premise of this and how you came up with it.
Well, it was really one of those things where as more details came out, you kind of realized the story was a red herring, because what was most scandalous about the story, in our opinion, as we read reports, was not, you know, what happened between Cheney and Whittington, but actually the fact that the vice president goes on these particular kinds of hunts. The more details were revealed, kind of like deep into the stories as we were reading them, we're just like, wait a second, people go and shoot like 70 caged birds and they're right there and then they're just released. That's not hunting. And we just couldn't get our heads around like what thinking about hunting as this, you know, pursuit which is involved with, has some skill, and you have to go out and you're in the brush all day and you know it's cold and you're up at the crack of dawn and all this ideas that you have about hunting. And we just kind of said, like, this here is really the scandal of this story, that this thing goes on and is any way, this is the most furthest thing removed from hunting you can possibly imagine. So we said, like, let's actually try to do, this is the closest to, I think, actual journalism. We really go right up to that point. And so we tried to find a place that would let us come on and do one of these hunts.
Well, let's hear the opening of this piece, and then we'll talk more about how you put it together. So here's Nate Cordry on The Daily Show.
When the vice president went on a private hunting trip last month, he took a lot of heat for shooting his friend. But the truth is, he's actually a crack shot who's downed as many as 70 pheasant in a single day. And he's done it on canned hunts, where birds are raised to be shot. I wanted to hunt pheasant like the vice president, so I made a reservation at the Tobacco Stick Hunting Preserve in North Carolina.
We release birds per order of the customer, and the customer is able to go to the field and hunt for these birds.
It's like regular hunting, but with a menu.
Quail are $7 each.
Okay.
The chucker is $13 each. The pheasant is $16. And we use pointing dogs for $75 each.
Can I shoot the dog?
That'd be a very serious issue to shoot the dog.
So I can't shoot?
Can't shoot the dog.
I was pretty sure that the vice president would get to shoot the dog, but 140 pheasant would have to quench my bird lust. But would my $1,000 ensure this was better than regular hunting?
Well, here, the birds are in the field for you. You know they're there. It's a sure thing. The birds are here. And on a wild bird hunt, you may find birds and you may not find birds.
And who really has time to hunt and track prey anymore?
It's a sure thing.
One thing I've always hated about hunting, it's the challenge.
So that's an excerpt from The Daily Show of a Nate Cordry report. My guest is Ben Carlin. He's an executive producer of the show, former head writer of the show, been with the show for 8 years. So Ben, explain a little bit more what goes on at this ranch and how the birds are actually shot by the people who've paid to hunt there.
I mean, they're basically kept in a coop, and you walk up and you look at what they have to offer in terms of the menu, and you pick out the amount of birds you want to shoot. And what they do is they take the birds in a crate and they put them in the back of a truck. They drive you and the birds in the back of the truck. So it's like this awkward, you know, dead bird walking moment where you drive to the field. You're in the front seat. The birds are in the back. The guides, if you can call them that, will then take the crates, go out into the brush. They will then dump the bird upside down so it's disoriented into the thicket, okay? You will then get in position, and then the guide will nudge the bird, like roust it basically, and it will, you know, being confused and disoriented, it will attempt to fly, and it flies up and you shoot it. So the one, like, nanosecond of freedom that this animal, you know, experiences in its life is the nanosecond before it dies, and that's what the vice president does, and we literally could not believe it. We sat there in the editing room and we could not believe that people do this, because truthfully, you know, I went to school in Wisconsin. My roommate was a hunter. I very much like the idea. I don't hunt myself, but I like the idea of it's, you know, deer season and you go out. His dad was actually a bow hunter. And would go out every year and bag a couple deer, and we would, later on in that year, we would eat venison steaks that his dad had shot with a bow and arrow. And I thought that was fairly, you know, in comportment with the order of the universe as we know it. And I don't have any kind of ethical problem with that at all. This to me seemed like very cheating.
How did you get permission from this hunting ranch to shoot there? Did they know what you were really up to? Do they know Daily Show?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think when you go and say we want to do a profile of, you know, your operation, you don't necessarily have to say, and oh, by the way, we're going to belittle it. But we always are truthful to the degree that we don't deny, you know, where we work and who we are and what we're doing.
But with the questions that Nate Cordry asked, they have to assume that either he's a satirist or he's learning disabled.
Yes. Yeah, but I got to tell you, more often than not, it's learning disabled. It's not, you know, people don't, especially when you get into a world that is, you know, fairly esoteric and not necessarily one that's drenched in a lot of exposure to the media or in a media center like New York. I don't think that there's necessarily that same skepticism that what's this person's angle necessarily. You know, we do a fairly good job, better now than we used to, of trying as much as possible to put the onus of stupidity and creepiness on our people, mm-hmm. and not we don't want to make anyone look bad unless they're doing something really horrible. And in this case, these people that we were interviewing weren't, I wouldn't say the perpetrators. They were just people that were working there. So we just kind of used them to kind of get the information out and to kind of make some points in general.
There was something really funny recently set in Daytona Beach. What happened was, Jon Stewart is talking about how Fox News had a report about a serial killer in Daytona Beach who is targeting prostitutes. And Daytona Beach is, of course, one of the places that a lot of students go during spring break, and this was during spring break. So would you take it from here and describe that report?
Yeah. This was something that we have this one department at the show who is kind of the master of all things video that is happening in the world, and they bring us these just beautiful nuggets every now and then. And this is one of the times where they caught this report about a serial killer who was on the loose, who was not targeting college students, was actually targeting prostitutes. However, the producer, because it happens to be spring break, the producers of Fox News thought that it would be great in a double box.
The split screen.
The split screen, when the reporter was speaking about the serial killer who is on the loose and the three murders have been prostitutes, to put in footage of these just dancing, drinking, you know, women, of course, in bikinis, doing, faux striptease dances on stages and on the beach, kind of MTV spring break style. And so you have this reporter giving this deadly serious report about a serial killer, and this just completely gratuitous, in no way relevant to the story, footage in the other box, distracting and more than distracting, completely. I mean, I would imagine, was just felt ashamed that this is what they chose to run in there. And then they go to this police expert who's talking about prevention and talking about things that you can do and when something like that is happening. And they just continue, and it's not just shots like a wide shot. They're showing like up close shots of cleavage and jiggling butts and everything. And it went on for about a minute and a half.
I know another thing that you often do on The Daily Show is take clips from past interviews or past press conferences that completely contradict what that same person has just said and play them back to back. So you take a current clip of somebody in the news, often somebody in the Bush administration, and juxtapose that with a clip of them saying exactly the opposite thing weeks or months ago. And I'll play an example of that. And this is, I think this is called Bush versus Bush. And it's President Bush from the time when he was governor and campaigning for the presidency, juxtaposed with what President Bush has said about Iraq. So let's hear a short clip of this.
Mr. President, you won the coin toss. The first question will go to you. Why is the United States of America using its power to change governments in foreign countries?
We must stand up for our security and for the permanent rights and the hopes of mankind. The United States of America will make that stand.
Well, certainly that represents a bold new doctrine in foreign policy, Mr. President. Governor Bush, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be.
All right. Well, that's interesting. That's a difference of opinion, and certainly that's what this country is about, differences of opinion. Mr. President, let me just get specific. Why are we in Iraq?
We will be changing the regime of Iraq for the good of the Iraqi people.
Governor, then I'd like to hear your response on that.
If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. But I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you.
Well, that's an excellent point. I don't think you can argue with that. Mr. President, is the idea to just build a new country that we like better?
We will tear down the apparatus of terror, and we will help you to build a new Iraq that is prosperous and free.
I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation building.
Well, that's fair enough, Governor. I mean,
it's an excerpt from The Daily Show. My guest is Ben Carlin, who is an executive producer and former head writer of the show. So Ben, do you remember how the sketch was written and what the process was like of finding the juxtaposed footage of the president?
Yeah. I mean, again, most things start with kind of just a concept or an idea. And this was kind of born out of this idea that everyone is saying so-and-so is a flip-flopper or this person is not consistent. And that's a label that people always tried, especially in last couple elections that people put on. That was a very strong tactic that Republicans used against Democrats. And we always, you know, believed that you are it's very difficult to be 100% consistent all the time, especially when cameras are always going to be on you. You're always going to be caught one way or the other. And we felt very strongly that Bush had kind of gotten this relatively free ride on this whole idea that he himself hadn't changed positions pretty radically on several things. So the idea then becomes to find the best examples to animate that. The challenge there more than anything is to try to make them funny. You know, before you want to make a point, but you got to really be very careful not to kind of dip into being super didactic. So I think for us, it was about finding the balance of making the point, which we thought was a valid point, but also injecting enough humor into it in the way that it was edited and structured, so people didn't feel like they were being, you know, poked in the chest.
Well, you know, there's a famous television moment where Jon Stewart was on crossfire with Tucker Carlson and Paul Begala, and he basically said to them, he basically begged them to stop hurting America. And he said to them, the thing is, you're doing theater when you should be doing debate. He said, it's not honest. What you do is not honest. What you do is partisan hackery. And this ended up on the internet, and the website, I saw it on. I went back to the website last night. There's already been like over 3 million hits just on this one website that has the clip. You were with him, I think, at CNN.
We were down in Washington. Uh-huh. We had done a book event earlier in the day and had gone over. And it was actually something that, you know, in our private moments, John, DJ, and myself would talk a lot about how great it would be to just call those guys out on what they do. But it was always this thing that was talked about in the laboratory of our private sanctum. And then when it was brought out into the world, while people responded to it in a positive way, I don't think that John, I know that John did not feel great about the way that all went down. And being in the room while it was happening, I can tell you, was probably the most awkward thing that I've ever kind of witnessed, because, you know, it was real. It was, you know, there's this kind of veneer that everyone puts on when you go on television. And this was someone, you know, just being unbelievably painfully honest to people's faces. And it was there was just you could just feel the air just being sucked right out of the room.
Well, what kind of thought went into it beforehand? Did you and Jon Stewart sit down and say, here's what you can do to lampoon the crossfire type of debate?
No, because that wasn't a lampoon. That's the difference. I mean, that was just a naked reprobation. And I think that we had always just talked about that as what would happen if you just went on there and just refused to play their game. And it was something that, you know, even in the car ride on the way over there, we talked about it. And it was there was considerable, you know, back and forth. Should I do this? Should we do this? Is this, you know. And we didn't know how it was going to go. And we thought that maybe, well, that could be just one small part of the conversation. Maybe say something either at the top or at the bottom, and then just the rest of the show will be the rest of the show. What was not foreseen was that it became, you know, the whole show. And then certainly afterwards, when we were – the conversation continued for about an hour afterwards, you know, back in the green room. And then the president of CNN was in there, I think, or the head of programming at the time, and it was fairly heated afterwards as well, and we just felt going back to the hotel that that was just a disaster of the highest order, and we had no idea that it would then become this thing that would, you know, have a life on its own.
So were you in the audience when this was happening? Could Jon Stewart see your face?
Well, I was in this, instead of standing backstage, I wanted to watch it from the auditorium. So I was kind of in the back of the auditorium watching it with a producer. And, you know, the lights are down. So I don't think he could see me because I was standing way in the back.
Thinking, oh, no.
Well, it was awkward because I was standing next to the producer of Crossfire, or one of the producers.
Oh.
And I just
kind
of
was at,
in the commercial break, I was just like, this is going well.
No, you and Jon Stewart are both Jewish, and Stewart sometimes uses the word Jewy on the show.
Yes.
Only a Jewish person could get away with doing that.
That is very true. That is very true. It's very funny, though, because a lot of times we'll write, the other night we did one where Samantha Bee, who's mm-hmm. not Jewish, mm-hmm. was in Israel reporting on the Israeli election results, and that's so in our kind of Jew wheelhouse in terms of, you know, where we go for humor on that subject. And we had five or six jokes that really could only be written by Jewish people. You know, I think we were talking about the number of parties, and there's 12 parties, and we were listing off some of the lesser known parties, and one of them was the Chutzpahkrats, and another one was Lefkowitz Party of Four.
Yeah, that's right. It was really funny.
And to have a non-Jew, I mean, have to recite those words. It's very funny to see. And every now and then we'll put in Yiddish. We'll put in a little Yiddish. I think someone called her, she said that she was being called a shiksa. And to see someone who isn't just familiar with that kind of language and that kind of speech pattern have to say these words, it's really not it's not fair.
So what's the consensus among your Jewish viewers? Is The Daily Show good for the Jews or bad for the Jews?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I think it's probably in the tradition of Jews who are ambivalent or hesitant to really embrace their religion, but very much want to acknowledge it.
Now, you started your career at the satirical newspaper The Onion.
I was in college, and I was writing for the newspaper, one of the student dailies. There were two. And a bunch of writers from the paper I was working for, which was the Daily Cardinal, had migrated from the Cardinal to The Onion. And The Onion was still very young and new on campus and was kind of becoming more and more popular. And it just seemed like such a more fun place to work. And you could kind of apply what little you did know at age 21 about journalism in a far more creative environment. So once I kind of got a little bored with writing for the Cardinal, I contacted the guys over at The Onion and they had me submit, and I joined as just an idea contributor and a writer my senior year of college.
What are some of the favorite headlines that you generated during your years with The Onion?
Well, probably my favorite was Christ's Returns to the NBA. And that was done after Michael Jordan returned to the NBA. And we had this great photo on the cover, which was Jesus just viciously dunking over a bunch of players with this just horrible look on his face. You got a guy who looked like Jesus. And the great thing about that story was, as I wrote it, we put in all these details that Jesus actually in college wasn't really that good of a basketball player. Like, he was second team all conference and he scored 19 points a game. Like, we had all these great little details that kind of undercut this idea of Jesus being this omnipotent being. That was probably one of my favorites, just because the picture is so unbelievably dramatic.
So do you end the day by actually watching The Daily Show and The Colbert Report at home on TV?
No, definitely not.
Why not?
There is not. That's one of the most amazing things. And if it was true about Larry Sanders, the idea of the host or the people who are involved in the production of the show actually going home and watching the show on air that night after 5 hours earlier watching it being taped is, I can't imagine doing that. The last thing I want to do when I leave the studio is to revisit. Not that it's unpleasant, but just because You just need that separation. You just need that. If you're leaving at 8 o'clock, at 9 o'clock at night, and you know you're coming back in the next morning at 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, the last thing you want to do at 11:30 is to watch the show again. If every now and then, if there's something amazing that happened and I want to show it to a friend or something like that, I'll do that. But I absolutely do not make a practice of watching the show at home.
Ben Carlin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Ben Carlin, speaking with Terry Gross earlier this year. Carlin is leaving The Daily Show and The Colbert Report at the end of the month, but has a book in the works and will remain connected to the Comedy Central shows as a consultant.